watching New Soundwave with your hosts, John DeLuna, Brian Kilby, XB, Lady Ray, Weebum, with Rob Springer.
Hey, everybody, it's your old friend, John DeLuna. Welcome to New Soundwave number 66, Unbelievable. With me this week, the core cast, XV, the beautiful XV, as we learned last week. He is a beautiful man. Peter, AKKK, Bweebum, Brian Kilby, our fearless leader, and Rob Springer. Gentlemen, how you guys doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. There's a
pretty
issue,
good
issue right now with video, so people can't actually see us. So sorry about that.
Well, we will
that.
Push through as Brian, our ace producer, efforts to bring us into 2011. This is going to be an awesome show. First of all, if you're in the chat listening to the live show, I'm going to feed you all sorts of awesome commercials and video clips of stuff that we're going to talk about throughout the show. It's going to be awesome because this show, first of all, we're going to do a little bit of news as usual, and then we are going to get knee-deep into failed concepts in video games, and baby, there are some awesome failed concepts. We won't get to them all, because this isn't like a five-hour show, but we'll talk about five really good ones, and we'll enjoy some of the awesome commercials and marketing, failed marketing attempts for these failed concepts. So let's get underway. First, the news. If you're a fan of the idea of a PlayStation and a phone, first of all, God help you. Second of all, the Super Bowl was probably a big day for you because we got the first commercial of the Sony Ericsson Xperia, which is exactly what you would think. It's a PlayStation in a phone, kind of an ugly phone. It's a slide-out phone. I've already linked it to our friends in chat. So I think the most interesting thing about this, guys, is I don't know if you've seen the commercial, but you need to, because it's got a horrifically cute and horrifically terrifying android robot, the little green android robot with human thumbs grafted onto his hands, his stubby little hands. I don't know who thought that was a good idea, other than Satan. But there you have it. And it was broadcast to, I don't know, 100 million people across the world. So, guys, I take it we're not hype for the PlayStation phone still, even though this the Android little Android robot with thumbs, has that sold you on it? Has it turned
you? It's pretty cool, man. I mean, it's got thumbs.
Somebody died for it, or somebody's walking around with
I mean, It's great. It's just any games yet?
Let's not talk about that.
Stop it.
Sorry.
Yes. Rob, you know why do you ask questions to answers you already know?
Well, I was just thinking eventually they'd get around to. I mean, they finally made one for the PSP last year.
Stop.
Oh no.
I just figured by the time they sequeled, they'd have some content. You know.
No.
You know, Rob, I can. If I have to bet money, you're gonna get to enjoy Crash Bandicoot, Ridge Racer,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ridge Racer,
maybe a Resident Evil, and then nothing else.
Mm-hmm. I hear it, but you forgot the where they took a really popular game franchise and made a game that was like just a train card game from it.
Oh, and the chat brings up another one. How about this Big Planet?
Yeah,
Big Planet. It'll make that $300 phone go down so smooth. Anyway, moving on. Okay, so here's an amazingly, shockingly failed concept, I guess. Activision is dropping Guitar Hero.
Thank God. That's
unbelievable, though.
Well, hasn't Guitar Hero kind of gotten outshined by like Rock Band anyway?
Yes, that. But
does anybody actually care about Guitar Hero anymore?
It doesn't sell.
Not that they didn't try.
Well, I mean, after 10 versions in 5 years, they got it.
They've got Band Hero now. So,
oh God!
And there's Guitar Hero and Song Flute Hero and I mean DJ Hero and
Clog Dance Hero.
I like that one. And harmonica. I mean, there's
River
a hero.
Dance Hero.
Oh, that was good too. Hard.
Stomp Hero.
You need the balance board. I mean, there's a lot of hero games out there. You know, I mean, eventually they had to say, hey, we're going to stop this and make Guitar Villain.
Enough's enough.
That would be excellent.
It really would be.
They need to make Guitar Hero the fighting game.
Oh, Pan Flute Hero. That's a good one. That's awesome. A good one. Yeah. Pan Flute Hero.
Yeah, it's like a weapons-based fighter.
Right. Or Activision Hero. Could reuse one of their older licenses from the Atari days and just make a brand new version of Hero.
Baseball Hero.
That was a good game, guys.
So, just so you know, the game debuted. So, Guitar Hero is not that old. Guitar Hero debuted, I don't know, just a few years ago, like 2007, 2008. The first game sold 1.5 million copies and made $45 million, which was actually a surprising hit. Guitar Hero 2, which came out, I don't know, 10 minutes later. sold 1.3 million copies, sales of over $200 million. So it was quite a bit more expensive, I guess, or they sold a bunch of like the super duper premium editions. So it wasn't that long ago that this was some kind of cash cow, a major hit. But, as we've said, I guess Activision sure knows how to ruin a billion-dollar franchise, don't they?
It was extremely cool for a while there. I remember when it was first, like, sort of a nerd thing. All the nerds were like, yeah, man, we're going to play Journey songs in the basement. And then it became cool. All the douchebags were playing it. And it became really popular. People stopped playing Halo for 5 minutes to play Journey on Xbox Live. It got really popular. But then it got to a point where, like, there's 10 versions, and every single one's got the same Motley Crue song on it.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah, you can only... I mean, you guys think it's annoying when it's like, hey, isn't this the same Doom I played last time?
killed Guitar Hero? Rock Band Beatles.
Why did that kill it?
Because it's Rock Band Beatles. That's awesome.
Because it was on clearance after like 5 minutes? Is that why?
Screw you.
Because it didn't sell.
Screw you.
Isn't that surprising? That's probably like the, I guess that's the sign that it's over. If like the Beatles can't sell.
It was like this. I mean, my Walmart still has that on clearance. I mean, they cannot give that away. And, you know, Guitar Hero, they really tried to give away the Van Halen set, and that didn't work. They did. They did give that away. They gave that away with the purchase of Guitar Hero 5.
Guitar Hero, someone behind the scenes were like, let's get a band that we can afford, and let's put out a game based on them. Okay, how about the games the kids are wanting these days? How about AC/DC? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Relevant. You know, and they after a while, it's sure, Metallica is Metallica, but there is a point where it's like, the kids just don't care anymore.
Rock Band was, AC/DC was Rock Band. And Guitar Hero is Metallica was Guitar Hero. And
my mistake.
Between the two of those, I mean, I'm really torn, but I bought Metallica because, you know, my heart, I'm a Metallica fan. But I have a hard time buying music from one artist on, in a set for like $60. I mean, that's, you know, sure, there may be 20 songs that I like as opposed to the 5 songs out of the 50 that you get on a regular game, but it just, I don't know, it just doesn't sit right with me.
Agreed. Anyway, well, rest in peace, Guitar Hero.
Yeah,
we knew you well. We knew you well. Dead at the age, the ripe old age of 3, maybe? So anyway, quite the franchise. Jumping to a franchise that's been dormant for 12 years. One of the final characters debuted for Marvel vs. Capcom 3 this week. Not too much of a surprise, except we got pretty high-quality video of the fight sequence. This character I'm talking about is, of course, the Devourer of Worlds, Galactus.
Oh.
So Galactus is going to be the final boss that we think he's going to be the final boss. We're pretty sure he's the final boss. In Marvel vs. Capcom 3, which comes out next Wednesday, next Tuesday, probably going to be a midnight launch. Many geeks will be flooding to your Best Buy around, 10 p.m. on Monday night, I would think, and getting in line. Actually, if you go out to your Best Buy now, there's a chance you can play the game right now. You can play a demo version because some Best Buys actually have the game set up replacing Madden or what have you on the sales floor. So if you're really into Marvel vs. Capcom 3, go to your local Best Buy. You may be able to play it right now.
I bought a Saturn for X-Men vs. Street Fighter. I mean, I love me some versus games, but I'm just, I don't know. Galactus, really? I mean, I didn't like Apocalypse and 2. I mean, and it's just going to be the same thing over again.
Well, what would you have instead?
I would have, like, a real fighter. Like, you know, someone who just happens to be awesome and, like, not the size of the whole freaking screen. But if I don't play somebody to fight somebody to fight the size of the screen,
well, we can Pontius Pink.
I'll play Super Bulls and Ghosts. I mean, that's what I'll do. But,
good idea.
You know, make Taskmaster the freaking, you know, enemy. He can do anything. He'd be like Shang Long from Mortal Kombat, but no.
Nice. Well, I was actually going to add that to blend, I guess, a little bit of, say, channeling Fanboy Versus, our comic book podcast. Is there anybody in the Marvel Universe right now who could be a fighter? And I guess maybe like Phoenix? I don't know. I mean, would that be a decent boss? I don't know.
Phoenix could be a decent boss, yes, if they wanted to go that route.
The Beyonder?
It's not 1984 anymore, Rob.
Don't tell Marvel that.
Dazzler? How about that? I know that one.
No, I mean,
the Molecule Man.
There's nobody really like that in the Marvel universe. Mm. DC, you have Darkseid, and maybe some people like that, but you know, Marvel, not so much.
Interesting. Really. So they don't have like these really like these. Yes, they don't have like these
Peter
walking
Porker?
Gods.
Sorry.
Interesting. The Hamburglar. How about that?
I would love McDonald's Land Fighter.
Capcom versus McDonald's.
Tell me that's not an awesome idea, guys. Think about
I'm telling you, the kids would love it. Mayor McCheese.
You could have a tag team of Grimace and, oh wait, guys, you know you got like Evil Ryu and Good Ryu?
Yes.
70s Grimace, 80s Grimace. You know when he was bad.
That's good.
I'm going to take your milkshakes.
How many, didn't he start with like, was it four arms or six arms? I can't remember.
He had four arms, and he was the bad guy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The name, right? Grimace.
I'm going to make you grimace. I'm so unhappy.
He like tears the arms off a kid. Oh, wait, maybe not. I don't know. Well, maybe that was some concept art.
Those are frightening commercials if you go back and watch them on YouTube. So maybe, hey, give me your milkshake and your soul.
Okay, so before we jump to the failed concept super show, and we talk about five failed awesome concepts, here's an awesome story brought by Peter. So it looks like Xbox Live maybe almost had Conan on it. So yeah, the Conan O'Brien show may have been an Xbox Live show. Apparently what killed the deal was it was going to be on Xbox Live, and nobody could really describe, is this going to be on TV or not? Like, is that a TV show? Is that an internet show? Is it a video game console show? So apparently they couldn't wrap their heads around it, and, you know, that's why it didn't go forward. But here's the question to you guys. So say there was a show of, like, this caliber on Xbox Live or PSN.
There is.
Would you watch it? Or, you know what I mean? Like, if there was, like, this mainstream, like, super show, like, well, I, you know, theoretically a super mainstream show like this, would it be worth the time to fire up the Xbox and watch it?
I can watch it on my Xbox now if I download it and stream it through TVersity, but...
Well, that hardly counts, though, does it?
I'm just being a jerk.
Well, I question...
I watched Land of the Lost on my Wii.
How many people, like, watch, you know... because the one that I can think of that was heavily sponsored by Microsoft was The Guild, or is... The Guild, and the only way to pretty much watch it was on MSN Video, which, who goes to that?
I don't.
Or at Xbox Live. You could stream them all through the Xbox Live Video.
That's on Xbox Live? I would never, ever watch it because of that, because I didn't know. But no, you know, I would watch it. I would watch something like that, I guess, maybe, if it was something I really wanted to watch. But, you know, I really like Conan, but TBS is really convenient for me. But I don't watch it. I watch one show a week, and you know, sometime of the year it's two shows.
And one of them is American Idol.
No,
I watch I watch South Park reruns at midnight and American Pickers on the weekend. Oh, Pit Boss, man, that's good TV.
What was that show we were watching like at 2 o'clock in the morning at your house, Rob?
Billy the Exterminator.
That was pretty awesome.
Awesome TV. Why would I watch awesome. Conan when I can watch some redneck grab possums? But, well, and he's like all high too on crystal meth. He's like, "All right, guys, there's a possum in that thing. They want to get, but we don't want to kill the possum. Here, spray me with oil. Get that sucker."
Awesome. Oh man, I think that's going to be my new ringtone right there.
Put that on Xbox Live.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. We'll get on that. We'll start a letter writing campaign, Rob, just for you, buddy, just for you. Okay, so. I think it's time to start talking about the failed concepts.
Guitar
the five awesome, just a sampling
PSP. Of
all the awesome failed concepts.
It's time for epic failure.
Yes, yes. Strap yourselves in, boys, because first of all, we're going to talk about the granddaddy of the Kinect, something I like to call the Sega Activator.
Oh my God, that's the thing where you can be like a fighter. You can fight like the characters on the screen in a circle.
Yes, except you can't. Like, at all. So, apparently, if you're a young whippersnapper, and the Genesis age is something you just hear about, let me regale you. So, Sega, for a time, was really innovative, except most of their innovations were about 10 years too soon.
Yeah.
The Sega Activator is one of them. The Sega Activator is basically an octagon. A little octagon, a plastic ring that you step into. You lay it on
it
the floor.
It works flawlessly.
It works flawlessly. You step into the ring, my friend, and all of a sudden your body becomes the controller. And so if you kick and you punch, and if you watch the link, if you're in live chat, you can watch the link on the tutorial video came with the activator. You kick and you punch, and the character on the screen kicks and punches. It sounds familiar. It sounds like the Kinect, right?
Except the guy keeps going backwards. What the hell?
Yeah, except it's totally not. So apparently, the commercial was, I would say, completely 100% absolutely misleading. So what was the activator actually? Well, it was not the Kinect. It was not a camera that reads your body motions. It was basically just a ring of infrared light. And so whenever your limbs crossed one of the planes, one of the eight sides of the octagon, it registered as up, down, left, right. So basically, apparently,
it was a DDR
really,
pad, but it was infrared.
Yeah, it was basically a D-pad. So it had no idea what was like standing in it. It had no idea really what you were doing. It was just kind of by pure luck. You know, if you moved forward, it registered as up, and if you moved back, it registered as down.
So basically, this was like a Roomba that did not move. You just moved everything around it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It's so like, if you're in chat, also I pasted an awesome YouTube video of a morning show with the two anchors testing out the activator.
Oh God!
You should watch. It's awesome.
You could literally play the activator with one arm, and you stand outside of it, and then move your hand into it. I mean, the activator, like you said, that was totally misleading.
So how do you if moving across the infrared beams triggered the directions, how did you do the action buttons then?
You didn't.
You just like flailed.
Oh, you didn't?
Yes, you didn't.
You tried.
Remember, it's an octagon. It's got a certain shape. So,
right.
So you move your laterally one way. That's one motion. Laterally, the other. Forward's the other. The other way's back. But then you have the other four motions, the other four directions. This direction would be punch or A. This direction would be B. This direction would be C. And then you probably have a direction for mode. Probably not, but that would have been a killer joke in like 1994. The mode button.
guys,
Ryan.
You guys forgot one important piece of motion gaming history. That would be the Rock and Roller by LGN.
Ooh.
U-Force.
Ooh, wow.
Nice.
I don't know, the Rock and Roller, you still had to use the controller the whole time.
U-Force, you just shoved your hands in it. I'm punching.
Just like XV's
mom.
That's
what she said. yes. All right, good times, guys. So for all the Sega love that we give, Sega throws out some turds. Let's be honest here. They're not all winners.
Well, they're human.
Not all winners. Something that, you know what, Nintendo gets a lot of praise for their Game Boy line, but not all Game Boys were winners either. In fact, there was one big turd, a big
winner
red.
Takes the fall. Winner takes it all.
Big red 3D turd.
Aw, oh, man.
It was called the Virtual Boy. It was called the Virtual Boy. Now, we talked a little bit about the Virtual Boy before, because you can't do a video game podcast and not talk about the Virtual Boy. So I'm going to defer, at least for a minute, to our Game Boy expert, Rob. Rob, did you have a Virtual Boy? Actually, let me back up real quick. Okay, so let me describe the Virtual Boy. Again, to our young viewers who may have only, who may have been lucky and missed this and not gone blind or had seizures from the redness, the epic 3D redness of the Virtual Boy. So the Virtual Boy was the first video game console displaying, capable of displaying, quote-unquote, true 3D graphics right out of the box. It looked kind of like a viewfinder, one of those, you know, what are those big red...
Viewmasters?
Yeah, Viewmaster. It looked like a Viewmaster on a tripod. And it had kind of an odd-shaped controller. I'll post a pic in the chat. It's kind of this odd, symmetric, double-handle black controller.
In a way, it feels kind of like the precursor to the GameCube controller.
It was a fun controller, now.
Yeah, I think that's right, XV. I think that's kind of like dead on, actually. It does look kind of like the proto GameCube trailer controller.
It definitely could shade things to come.
Yes, yes. Well, in some cases. Thank God not everything about the Virtual Boy.
I just meant the controller, not the whole system, John.
Yes, 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 yes. So it was, quote-unquote, the first 3D out-of-the-box game system. It debuted in 95 in Japan, the summer of 95 in Japan, and a little bit later, a couple months later, in North America for $180.
That's right.
This is awesome. Because usually, you know, when almost any system, no matter how bad it is, usually gets fairly good reception, okay reception when it comes out. The Virtual Boy, according to Wikipedia, received, quote, lukewarm reception, which means they probably sold, I don't know, maybe a
five.
I don't know, more than five, less than 10 units. I don't know. Actually, total, before the Virtual Boy bit the big one, it sold apparently 770 units.
Oh, God.
I don't know how. I don't know where. And it was discontinued in March of 96.
Whoa, it sold more than 700. It's 770,000 units?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, making sure. 770 units would be, like, virtually non-existent.
Oh, no. Yeah. 770,000.
So it lasted 000. Less than a year, huh?
That's amazing, yeah, when it was discontinued in March of the next year.
I remember playing it in a Toys R Us by my house, and I was playing Star Fox. And I remember running into buildings and blowing myself up because everything looked exactly the same.
What was that game, Rob? It wasn't Star Fox.
Red Alarm, yeah, Red Alarm. Something like that, yeah.
Oh, okay. Red. I just kept all I know is I kept crashing into buildings.
Yeah, because they didn't
they look
color in the
like,
walls.
Right. I was like, oh, the ground looks like the walls. The walls look like a ground. Oh, I just got blown up by that ship that looks exactly like a wall.
And stick figures are floating.
Nice. So here's the list of games. And unfortunately, I can list them in, I don't know, about 20 seconds. So 3D Tetris, Galactic Pinball, Golf, Jack Brothers.
Good game.
Jack Brothers. Mario Clash.
Great game.
Mario's Tennis.
Pretty good game.
The best one, the best named one, Nestor's Funky Bowling.
Oh, God, Nestor.
Yeah, got his own game.
Panic Bomber, Red Alarm.
Howard Phillips deserved his own game.
Yes.
He sure did. Tolero Boxer. Ooh, that's very exotic.
Good game.
Yeah. Vertical Force. Mm. Your mom got my Vertical Force. Virtual Boy, Wario Land.
Great game. Great
Virtual League
game.
Baseball and this is good. Water World.
Cool.
That U.S. There are more games released abroad.
That's not a nail in the coffin right there.
Yeah. Well, that's nice.
And let's not forget the games they didn't finish, like GoldenEye. That was slated for release.
That would have been awesome because it's GoldenEye, but everything's red.
Red-eyed GoldenEye. I've been on a plane all night.
I'm just saying. Okay, good stuff. Okay, number three. number three on our list. This is a good one. This is maybe the most famous of them all. And it is a failed concept, let's be honest. It is the Nintendo Power Glove.
Man, I love the Power Glove.
Brian.
So rad.
Can you explain the concept of the Power Glove and what it was meant to do? Because while I have seen the Power Glove and I've seen, like, the parodies and the crap from it, I've actually never known somebody who actually had a working Power Glove.
I have a working Power Glove
and a working NES in conjunction. So I've never actually seen it used.
That's
interesting. Not what you thought.
No.
Okay, Ryan, go.
Okay, basically, around your TV, and I don't, and keep in mind, I don't know which is the sensor and which is the emitter, but there, it's a sensor slash emitter pair. I'm pretty sure that the emitter is this little angled thing you put around your TV. You have a horizontal plane and a vertical plane, and they attach to the TV via Velcro. And then, then it spits out...
it's like this big of a box, right? It's like a pretty big box.
It's about 3 inches square.
It was quite large.
Yeah, and there's three of them.
It's like single gang boxes put on your TV.
Yeah, so you wear the glove, and of course the glove is tethered by a cord that goes to the Nintendo. And on the knuckles there are the receivers, and it builds a 2D plane. Keep in mind around the TV that you move laterally and up and down with, and you could punch and crap, you know, by moving your fingers, because there were sensors in the fingers that would know when you moved. So you really didn't have any sort of 3D sort of motion with it. It was really all sort of 2D. And there was a controller on the wrist that you could kind of sort of play stuff with. But you could program in, like, if I twitch these two fingers, it does something. If I turn my wrist this way, it does something.
It's just like with your mom.
Yeah, it's like really probably the most useless thing I've ever had. There was
and he defended it. Ladies and gentlemen. Yeah,
there's not a lot of stuff you can do with it. Where the Virtual Boy, you know, while it was around, it was kind of fun. I can't really think of a single Nintendo game that I actually enjoyed. You know, I kind of wanted to play Super Glove Ball, but I never did. So I tried, you know, in vain to play Punch Out. And I was pretty decent playing Super Mario Brothers, but yeah.
So you had to. So the Power Glove was usable for any game that was currently out on the NES.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it wasn't a light gun game, you could use any game, or yeah, any game at all. You could even use like a Rob the Robot game. So
yeah,
I mean,
the problem with it was every commercial in the Wizard made it like you're playing like this, with your hands all outstretched. Reality, you were like. Sucks.
Yeah. Lucas lied so much.
Did you just take yours off and use the controller?
Yes, a lot.
Me too.
He was like playing Rad Racer.
I was going to use it.
He was playing Rad Racer and crap in the Wizard, and it just looked so awesome, and no. I mean,
it didn't work like that.
It didn't work like that.
Yes. The villain, Lucas Barton, is seen playing.
Yeah.
In Nightmare on Elm Street, Freddy's Dead, the final nightmare. Mm. The Power Glove is in
the Power
there.
Glove.
How about that? And... in the movie Hackers. Who saw that movie? I don't know. But if you did, you
I think Rob Glove. Saw it for the Angelina Jolie stuff.
Hey, at the time, that was a pretty punk movie.
It was. Cyberpunk. So, yeah, yes. You know, in Ghostbusters 2, we had the NES Advantage.
Yep.
Statue of Liberty.
How about that?
I've seen many bands playing where at least one of the guys was wearing a Power Glove. Like, they snipped the cord off, but it's like, yeah, all right, Nintendo, fuck y'all.
And so the Power Glove sold over 100,000 units in the U.S., and it grossed $88 million. But the games that were made especially for the Power Glove did not sell, buddy.
Okay.
And that's really what killed it.
100,000 units and $88 million. So let's do the math.
Christmas.
Yeah, so if...
yeah.
So let's see here. What's that? $800. It didn't cost $800.
No way. It was like $15.99.
No, it was like $30.
Oh yeah.
Let me see if I can find the.
It was about the price of an extra controller.
Well, no, not an extra controller now. Not an extra controller then. Like an NES controller was like $15.
It came with that cool book with the kids showing you how to properly use it.
One thing I always appreciate. It was a Mattel product. But yeah. One thing I always appreciated...
Yes, it wasn't made by Nintendo. It was made by Mattel.
Licensed.
Yeah, what I always appreciated, like, the really close Nintendo stuff is the manuals were always really nice. Nintendo makes great manuals.
They do.
You too.
Yes. Okay, so... the Power Glove. We love you. We hate you. We can't live without you. We don't want to forget you.
You're so rad.
I do want to forget. and also, yeah, I'm going to challenge Wikipedia on that 100,000 units versus the 88 million.
I mean, Wikipedia's never wrong.
Well, I don't know. Citation needed, my friend. Citation needed. So maybe
Jesus did train the Ninja Turtles. It said so.
Yeah. Maybe.
Did you do that entry, Rob? Is that,
yes.
Yes, I thought so.
I'm going to believe that it was more like 8.8 million, maybe? Yeah. 100,000 units and 8.8 million.
That's
terrific. That sounds good. $88. That's about what it's worth. It's worth nothing. It's worth garbage. You know what's worth nothing and is garbage? The Atari Jaguar.
No!
Yes!
Tempest 2000? We also got, what else was worth playing? Kazumi Ninja, no, that game was crap. Aliens versus Predator?
Yes, that is two.
And that's really it.
And it doubles as a toilet with the CD player.
The controllers.
No, go ahead.
Get arthritis by trying to use the controller.
Three buttons and a keyboard.
Yeah, we'll get to the controller, which is, I guess, probably its most infamous trait, I would say. In the chat, I just posted one of the awesome, it may be one of the few, it may be the only, commercial for the Jaguar that touted the 64-bitness.
It was so, two 32-bit processors in tandem.
Yes. So
by, as that, by that reasoning, the 32X was a 64-bit console.
Yeah, yes. Brian's geek pants are going crazy. He's going into the rage here, as most people do, well, because, yes, the Atari Jaguar.
The Neo Geo was a 16-bit console with, like, an 8-bit graphics coprocessor. So, and
$900.
The TurboGrafx 16 was an 8-bit processor as well. It just had two of them. So, I mean, there are lots of games. There are lots of systems that claim to be something that they weren't, and, you know.
Yes. The Jaguar is famously one of them. Yes, it is. It was promoted as the first 64-bit system to the point where that was like its tagline. The tagline for the marketing was "Do the math," and Brian just did the math, and it doesn't add up. So a little bit more about the Atari Jaguar. It was released by Atari in 1993. It was the last to be marketed under the Atari brand until the Atari Flashback a few years ago, about 2004-ish. It was designed to surpass the Genesis and the Super Nintendo, so keep that in mind. But it ended up really competing with the Saturn and the PlayStation, rut-row. So it wasn't as impressive and as timely as Atari would have liked. An interesting bit of trivia, and I remember this actually reading at EGM about this kind of stuff. So the Jaguar started as one of two projects that Atari had. One was a 32-bit architecture, codenamed the Panther. And I remember reading about the Panther. And the other was the, quote-unquote, 64-bit system, codenamed Jaguar. But the Jaguar was developed much faster than expected, and so Atari just went with that. They skipped the Panther and went right to the Jaguar. It was introduced...
But they should have rode the Tiger, is what they should have done.
They really should have. Yeah,
you can see
they really should have.
Never mind.
nice, buddy.
Sorry.
Nice. I see you. So, like I said, it was released in '93, November of '93, just in time for the holidays. How about that? For $250.
Oh my God.
Yes.
How much was the CD unit? How much was that?
I have to look that up. I can look that up real quick. But let's talk about the most infamous part of the Atari Jaguar, which was the controller, the 15-button controller.
Oh, that's no joke. That's no joke. It had 15
that
buttons.
That is no joke.
And that all of them down here.
Yeah, all of them were like in a point where you really had to hold it with one hand and then press with the other.
Boy, I wish I could play Star Raiders correctly.
it was a nightmarish thing. It had, let me see, I think it was a 12 button keypad,
yes,
smack dab in the middle of the controller. Not a 9 button, not even like a normal like you know, I don't know, a 9 button phone ish looking keypad. Oh no, this is 12. 12 buttons. So let's see here. I can't really find the price on the Jaguar controller, right? The Jaguar CD right now. All I can tell you is it was too much. How about that?
yeah, it was too much.
Yeah, it was too much. The two notable games that came out for the Jaguar probably, Brian, is I think you brought up Tempest 2000, yes, and Aliens versus Predators. Those are certainly two of the really highly rated games that came out for the Jaguar. Not a whole lot else was praised or talked about. It's probably the two pieces of software that define the system. Like I said, once Atari found itself facing PlayStation and Saturn, the sales, whatever sales there were, of Jaguar plummeted immediately. And they closed shop pretty quick. Oh, here's a blast from the past that I just stumbled upon. So the Jaguar CD was kind of a last-ditch effort to breathe life into the Jaguar. And frankly, try to somewhat bring it up to speed with PlayStation and Saturn. And one of the games that came out for the Jaguar CD is Primal Rage, which is...
It's an Atari game.
Yes. I mean, if anything should come out for Jaguar CD, it's Primal Rage. But Primal Rage is one of those awesome, quirky, mid to late 90s type fighters that is...
Early 90s. I saw a cabinet this weekend.
Awesome.
You know...
Awesome,
buddy. Primal Rage would have been a great killer app for the Jaguar, except for one problem.
It was the Jaguar.
It was already on all the other systems by the time the Jaguar came out.
Was it? Yeah, it was.
It's like, hey, you want to buy this really expensive new system? Man, what's it got on it? Primal Rage? All right, got that.
I remember playing, I bought Primal Rage for like $75. Of course, you know, cartridge-based games were expensive.
Yes.
And I ended up trading it in toward a PlayStation or something for like $2, like 6 months after I got it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
One thing I did like about the Jaguar games was the handle they had on top of the controller, because it was like, my game is hardcore. Oh.
Weapon X in the chat saying that Samurai Showdown was on the Jaguar. It was on the Genesis, the SNES, of course, the Neo Geo, the Neo Geo CD, and the Philips and the 3DO, but I don't remember it being on the Jaguar. You may be thinking of the 3DO version. There was a flashback game, though, yes. The Quest for Identity, yes. That game was on the... That game did come out.
The quest to figure out what the hell I'm supposed to do.
Speaking of flashback, my favorite Atari system is the Flashback 2.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the 2600 version of the Flashback. Fantastic. $15. Best $15 ever.
Can accept cartridges.
You have to mod it to accept cartridges. But yes, it will.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
How
nice,
difficult
nice.
Is the mod?
Get a Dremel.
The hardest part is cutting it open. Then you solder a couple of things to it. And it's not a hard mod. Though I don't want to damage it because it's kind of beautiful and perfect as it is.
Get an extra one and mod it.
Very nice.
I don't want to spend the money on an extra one because they're expensive now.
Yeah, they disappeared pretty quick after being on clearance.
Yeah.
So I thought to wrap it up, like I said, we could talk about this all night long because there are many failed concepts. But we had to do one that was basically a handheld system, right? We had to touch all our bases, console, weird peripherals, and the handheld.
PSP.
And in an upset, we're not going to talk about the N-Gage, because the N-Gage is too easy. It's too easy and it's too famous. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about the Gizmondo.
Oh.
Yes. Yes.
Man, you just exploded.
Many people may not even know, may have never heard of a Gizmondo, and to you, I salute you. You're better for it.
No, they still think it's a clever tech blog.
that's where Gizmodo got the name. You have to think so.
Nice. Yeah. They had to. It's probably the only buck these people ever made on the Gizmondo, is selling their name to Gizmodo.
Oh my God, Gizmondo came out in 2005.
Yeah, not that long ago.
They closed the day after it came out. It was
basically
like, man.
Yeah, pretty much.
What came out on this?
Nothing.
So if you're asking, what the hell is a Gizmondo? I'll tell you what the hell is a Gizmondo. The Gizmondo was a handheld system, a very short-lived handheld system that came out. It was released by Tiger Telematics in March 2005. And it was sold – well, it was actually – to back up. So it was released in March 2005. It was discontinued in February 2006. it sold fewer than 25,000 units. The most famous part of the Gizmodo is that one of its executives, Stefan Eriksson, both sliced his Ferrari in half in a car accident, and he was convicted of organized crime because apparently he ran a crime family in Sweden. So he is awesome. His system is not. Now, in chat, I posted a picture of the Gizmondo, and as you can see, it is, you know, your run-of-the-mill handheld.
It's got amazing specs.
Yeah, it's got amazing specs, and we'll get to that. It's got amazing specs. It was released, here we go. You're going to love this. This was, I guess, maybe ahead of its time, but it's still sort of ridiculous. So it was released in the UK, Sweden, and the United States. We'll focus on the United States. In the United States, the Gizmondo was launched October 22nd, 2005. Retail price, $400.
Ow.
It was worth it if you look at what it came packed with. It's amazing.
Rayman.
Yes. And, yes. Also, its best-selling game was named Sticky Balls.
So you Sticky, gotta, balls.
Sticky Balls. So... You gotta get your copy of Sticky Balls, right? Right off the shelf. Okay, so it was released in 2005 for $400. And that was for a unit without, quote-unquote, smart ads. So you ask yourself, what are smart ads? Smart ads are what they sound like. So apparently, you could buy a Gizmondo in two versions. $400 gets you a unit without smart ads. And $230 gets you a unit with smart ads. And smart ads were randomly placed commercials inside the game that were used to subsidize the price of the hardware, apparently. So if you were okay with commercials just kind of popping up on the home screen and when you booted up the game, you could get a much cheaper piece of hardware. I guess that sounds okay.
Games do that now, but they don't subsidize anything. They just do it.
Yeah. So 5 years ago, 6-7 years ago, this probably confused the hell out of everybody because it was such a weird model. But yeah, Brian, to your point, it's the model now, basically, right? Okay, so you're asking what games came out for this? Well, not many. So like I said, this was a short-lived system. It was sold at one of it was only available through Gizmondo's website, and in 2005, God knows what that looked like. And one of several kiosks in shopping malls, which is totally legit, right? You're willing to walk up to in the middle of the mall and throw down $400 for a video game system that would only have 8 games total. 14
still
games
a PSP.
14, nice. 14 games were planned. It had a GPS. How about that? It was also had, obviously, connectivity to the internet. That's how it got its ads. Here are the total specs. So the resolution was 320 pixels by 240 pixels. Built-in speakers, 64 megabits of RAM, Bluetooth. What? In 2005, a removable battery, a camera. Like I said, a GPS. It had a flight mode. It was an amazing piece of hardware. Amazing piece of hardware. Too bad it, you know, was basically a sham. Like I said, because one of the founders was a crime boss. He was like, you know, Tony Soprano.
We can basically assume this is like a money laundering scheme or something, right?
I think so. I hope so.
But
except
it
for sticky.
Wasn't vaporware. Except, I mean, thing actually, you look at the specs now, and you up them a little bit, and it's basically, this was the progenitor of modern cell phones. I mean, it's running an ARM processor at 400 megahertz. You know, now ARM processors and your higher-end phones run at about a gigahertz, which, you know, 64 megs of RAM, which is not bad. It's got Bluetooth. It has a mini USB and an SD card reader. I mean, it plays MPEG-4, MP3, and MIDI. Had a camera. I had a SIM card, so, I mean, it worked just like a phone. It had GPS, did SMS and MMS. And it had polyphonic ringtones and a web browser. Ooh. It had a web browser. I mean, that's pretty freaking awesome. So that's impressive.
Except it totally wasn't, which is sad.
Yeah.
It's so just sad. Kind of ironic.
But again, sticky balls. Desk.
Sticky balls.
You know, if the PSP would have had that, it might have gotten somewhere.
Actually, the PSP came out in Windows 6.
Falling asleep over there.
Six.
Yeah, Bleepum's asleep.
Good. I'm just listening.
He's so jet lagged. It's so cute.
I'm dead.
Yeah, he's barely.
Actually, it's the lead poisoning from Thomas the Tank Engine.
Yeah.
He's high off the fumes from Thomas the Tank Engine.
The only thing I can say is I'll promise you'll wake up in the middle of the night with cold sweats, and all you'll be thinking about is sticky balls, and you'll have no idea.
No idea. All I keep thinking about is
that's
another
for Wednesday.
Handheld. I keep thinking of another handheld called, it's like a Neo Geo Pocket.
Yeah, Neo Geo Pocket.
Did that fail as badly, or, I mean, was that better?
It was a total failure. This Gizmondo was an utter and complete failure. Also,
it was
epically illegal in some way.
Considering,
I don't know.
Considering there was actual real potential of the Neo Geo Pocket and the subsequent Neo Geo Pocket Color, you can almost say that it was more of a failure because it actually had games worth playing. And it's a shame that nobody did.
I think it was a bigger hit overseas than here. So it had some life. Gizmondo was stillborn.
You know, if I'm going to go to a kiosk in the mall and buy a game system, it's going to be shaped like an N64 controller, and it's going to have ROM hacks on it.
Here it is.
Yes, there it is. Okay, to wrap up the show and wrap up the Gizmondo, if you were unlucky and missed the Gizmondo 1, there was a time.
Awesome.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So the former director of the Gizmondo, Carl Freer, I believe, and all these guys are Scandinavian, which makes it extra cool and kind of shady, too. Awesome. It's awesome. They have these exotic foreign names. It's awesome. The former director of Gizmondo, Carl Freer, announced in early 2008, he was going to relaunch the Gizmondo. He was going to make this work. He was going to release the Gizmondo 2. So the original planned launch of the Gizmondo 2 was in May 2008. Keep in mind that the first one was released in 2005 and died in 2006. So in 2008, we're already planning the launch of the second one. So the first date announced was May 2008, but that was quickly pushed back to November 2008. At the same time, they announced details of a new company, Media Power, which was going to make the Gizmondo 2, headed by Carl Freer again and his Swedish partner, Mikael Lujman.
Distinctive.
So the development apparently proceeded. You know, everything is good. Everything's good, at least until September of 2008. And by December of 2008, the console still hadn't appeared, although it had been promised the month before. And then another announcement was made about a complete redesign of the Gizmondo 2 as a Windows CE or Google Android-powered smartphone. Since then, this company, Media Power, has taken down their website. And the co-founder, Mikael Lujman, has been arrested and convicted of fraud. We haven't heard anything more about the Gizmondo 2.
Gizmondo is just completely tied into criminal activity.
You know, they should really just stop naming it Gizmondo.
Apparently,
it's now called the NGP.
They left off. You guys, I think they left off a paragraph on that article. You guys, they are going to release the Gizmondo 2. It's called the PSP 2.
Sorry, Bob.
Futility.
Okay, so on that note of fraud and international intrigue and Gizmondo goodness, we're going to wrap it up.
I can't do anything with a site.
Thanks as always for listening, guys. We will see you next week for New Soundwave number 67. Until then, do tune in if you're listening to this on recording, and if you're out there live especially, do tune in on Saturday, February 12th, for our sister show, the mother show of the TF Radio Network, RFC. We're going to do live coverage of Toy Fair. Toy Fair is awesome. Toy Fair is triple awesome. To fill dead airspace time, we may talk a little bit about video games. You never know. You never know what we're going to do, but tune in for live Toy Fair 2011 coverage.
You guys can
otherwise, I'll see you next week for New Soundwave, for XV, for Peter, for Brian Kilby, for Rob Springer. This has been New Soundwave 66. See you next week for number 67.
This has been New Soundwave with your hosts, John DeLuna, Brian Kilby, XB, Lady Rick, Weebum, with Rob Springer. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Check out all our videos at tfvideo.net. Like the podcast? Tell your friends. New Soundwave is a Radio Free Cybertron production. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.